Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 49 of the True Crime All the Time Unsolved podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, what's going on this after Christmas?
After Christmas?
Before New Year's time frame.
Right there, smack in the middle.
smacking.
Same thing.
Flip it up, rub it down.
That's right. Smack dab in the middle.
Yeah, what's going on? How was your Christmas?
It was good.
That doesn't sound great.
No, because I got a little ill.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Yeah, that's all right.
Had a little minor illness over the holidays. That stinks. Diverticulitis.
Yes, that thing.
I hate when that happens. I never had that. But
no, you don't want to. It's no fun.
Fairly common.
Yeah, a lot of people get it. Yeah, just a little painful.
So you're playing through an injury tonight.
Playing through. I always do.
You know.
Last week, kidney stone. Played on through.
I know. It's we didn't even talk about it.
I know. I just.
That's the type of manly man that you are.
I just bite on that nail and keep going.
All right, Gibbs. Let's talk about our new Patreon supporters. We got a lot. Miranda Dupier. Lisa Lewis jumped out at our highest level.
LL.
Haley Miller.
Haley.
Big time social media contributor.
She really is.
Mercedes Mishua Guerrero.
Yes.
I'm hoping. I got my fingers crossed on that one. Vicky Ferris.
Yeah.
Nicole Grant.
Oh, Nicole.
Katrina Hockey.
Did you say hockey?
Hockey.
Like the hockey game?
Yeah.
Really?
It's actually spelled just like it, too.
Huh.
Cindy Davis jumped out at her highest level. Lisa Moss. Adam Barber. Angela Mullins.
Angela Mullins. Just wanted to say the
you
name.
You just wanted to say the name? All right. That's yeah. Fine. JD.
We already talked about JD, but, you know, that boom right there.
Badass.
Yeah. Belt buckle.
Ariane Badinger. Bethany Hebert.
French.
French Canadian, maybe? I don't know.
French Louisiana.
Cajun.
Creole.
I don't know. Cool name, though.
Yeah, probably not French at all.
There used to be a quarterback named Bobby Hebert, spelled the same.
Really? I knew that French Louisiana football player.
Who's that?
Bobby Boucher.
You're like, that was made after you, wasn't it?
Bobby
that
Boucher.
Was a real story made after Gibby.
Bobby Boucher.
The water boy.
Nice.
My mama,
don't burn my food.
And Kellyanne, Joe Esquinas. He jumped out at our highest level. And then we had Justin Waymire. And then if we go back into the vault, Gibbs. This week we selected Key Sardi.
Key? Yeah.
Cool name. And Key's been with us for a very long time, contributing at our highest level for a very long time. Been around a long time. So big shout out to Key. And you know, big shout out to all of our new supporters as well, and all of the people that continue to support us month after month, week after week.
Appreciate it.
Listening to us.
The ones that are going to join tomorrow. Thank you.
Future Patreon supporters.
Yeah.
And the people that just pump us up on social media. It means a world of difference. But we did have some people contribute on PayPal as well. We had Catherine Quigley.
She's pretty vocal on social media as well.
She gave a sizable donation on PayPal, as did Michelle Herbert, who is a serial contributor on PayPal.
Serial contributor?
Serial, how about that?
Wow.
And she always makes a sizable donation, so we appreciate that. And then we had Alex Howell, who's a new contributor on PayPal.
Awesome.
So big love, big thanks to everybody that supports us.
Appreciate it all. Each and every one.
So you're listening to this episode. Don't forget, if you haven't already, check out True Crime All the Time.
It's not a bad podcast.
It's not too bad.
Yeah.
I heard the two guys are dipshits.
Well, just the one that does all the talking.
Yeah. He's ludicrous. I was trying to think of a word and I couldn't figure out what
they call him Ferguson, but okay.
Yeah.
You wish you were ludicrous.
I wish I was ludicrous. I wish I had ludicrous's money.
Money, yeah.
But we have an episode out right now, and it's a departure from what we've done in the past. We're actually doing two different cases in one episode, but both in a theme, and the theme is murders that went on to create laws.
Yeah.
And they're both around laws around how sex offenders either need to register or how mandatory minimums came to be, stuff like that. So
it's good stuff.
Yeah, it's an interesting episode. Tragic, don't get me wrong.
No, but at least it has some type of positive twist eventually in the end.
Something did come out of these senseless acts for sure. All right, Gibbs, you ready to get into this episode of True Crime All Time Unsolved?
Ready.
I like this one.
You ought to.
Why?
It's got it all. Mystery, money, sex appeal.
It does. I mean, it's got all the makings, and they did make a movie out of this one.
Oh, they did? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I can't remember what it's called. It was didn't have any like superstars in it, but you know, had a couple people that you would probably know if you saw them.
Yeah.
But we're going back a little ways. We're going back to the 70s.
It's a good time.
Yeah. I mean, you had three kids by that point already.
Yeah, whatever, man. What was I? 19. I was pushing 10. Yeah. 10 years old.
I was 3 years old. We're going back to 76.
Yeah. I was 10.
So we start out talking about a man named Stan Farr and his girlfriend Priscilla Davis. Fort Worth, Texas, August 2nd, 1976. They're out on the town.
Living it up.
Living it up. And after this night on the town with their friends, they all decide to head back to Priscilla's mansion. And we say mansion, Gibbs. This is an absolute mansion.
It, no doubt about it.
This is not stretching some big house and saying it's a mansion.
No. This is the real deal.
There is a lot of money wrapped up into this case that we're going to get into. But as this group gets back to the mansion, they're met with gunfire. And there is a man shooting at them dressed all in black.
Not Johnny Cash.
Not Johnny Cash that we know of. And after the shooting stops, eventually police arrive on the scene. And what they find is broken glass. And I assume they found a lot of that because this big mansion had probably tons of windows. They find blood throughout, and they find Stan Farr dead. And then they find another individual dead, but it's not Priscilla, and it's not any of the friends that they brought back with them. They find Andrea Wilborn, who was Priscilla's 12-year-old daughter, and police are going to later theorize that they believe that Andrea was shot earlier in the evening prior to the group coming back. They also find Priscilla, who's been shot in the chest, but she's still alive, and one of her friends alive but injured. Now, we talked about Stan Farr, and he was found on the main floor in the kitchen, and he was shot 4 times. Bubba Gavril, the friend that I mentioned just a minute ago, he was found out in the driveway, barely alive, paralyzed from the gunshot wounds that he suffered. Andrea was found in the basement. She was shot in the chest 1 time. But you got to remember, Gibb, she was only 12 years old.
Yeah, I mean, who shoots a 12-year-old? 12-year-old in the chest.
This is the mystery that we've got to unravel.
Yeah.
It's part of the mystery. Because you have to take that into account. I mean, she's a part of this story.
Yeah. What's a 12? I mean, isn't your youngest 12?
Yes.
I mean, who would do something like that?
Right.
It's hard for me to even wrap my head around it.
But normally in these stories, right, the 12-year-old is not going to be the focus of the rage.
Right.
She was
in the wrong place.
Yeah, wrong place, wrong time. I would say that. She's not the intended victim.
No.
Usually a 12-year-old is not in these cases. But unfortunately, she was at the house, and you know she was shot and killed. But we got to talk about Priscilla, because we talked about money. We talked about her living in this big mansion. She was married at the time, but going through a divorce from a man named Cullen Davis. And Cullen Davis wasn't just a millionaire. He was a multi-millionaire.
Yeah, almost, I mean, over a half of $1 billion.
That's big time millionaire.
1976, $500 million. That'd be like 1.2
gigawatts?
Yeah. That'd be a lot of, yeah.
1.2 billion today?
Today,
is that
probably
your money conversion?
Well, after the, you know, up and down of the stock market and all that, it balance out, eventually be like 1.2.
Well, the thing is, you invest half a billion, $500 million?
Yeah.
Over, what, 40 years?
Yeah.
You're going to make a lot of money.
Yeah, maybe it's worth, maybe.
You're going to lose some, but.
Maybe my calculations could be.
It might even be low.
Yeah.
I would say.
I think at this point it might be low. I'm going to recalculate that and come back out at 2.7.
All right. I like it. Andrea Wilborn was Priscilla's daughter from a previous marriage. And what you read about Andrea, right? Only 12 years old, but was described as an old soul. It's not something you hear a lot about 12-year-olds, but that's the way that she was described. She loved animals. She was very artistic. And like her mother, she was very beautiful because Priscilla was, you know, by most any measure, you know, one of the most beautiful women around the whole area.
Yeah, she was definitely an eye catcher in the Fort Worth area.
And I think she knew it, Gibbs, because going back to that time period and reading about her, you know, she didn't dress like the other moms and wives.
Well, she wasn't conservative.
No, she was not conservative in 1976. She was wearing the hot pants, halter tops. This was a high society community where, you know, people dressed more conservative, probably dresses. And she's like on the set of Saturday Night Fever.
Or you know, how Olivia Newton-John comes out at the end of that Grease movie.
Oh, yeah. That's probably.
Tell me about it, stud.
Dude, I don't need to know about what dream you had last night. Just keep that to yourself. But we are trying to paint this picture because I think it's important.
Oh, I think so. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she definitely was an eye catcher. They talk about it in a lot of the research. She took very good care of her body and had no issues of
showing it off.
Yes.
Yeah. She liked it. She liked attention.
Sure. Nothing wrong with that.
Even her oldest daughter, because she had more than one daughter, but her oldest daughter would say that her mom was the most gorgeous woman that she ever saw.
Yeah.
Now, she was 5'2", tiny. I mean, she was pretty short.
Firecracker.
Firecracker, blonde. Along with her look, she had this very large personality, outspoken. She was not, and this is why it's important to describe all this, she was not the typical Fort Worth high society woman that had come from a long line of money, because she didn't.
No, she didn't grow up that way. So, and she didn't have a problem speaking her mind. And I think at first, Colin really liked that.
Well, I assume he was attracted to her physically from the beginning, as most attractions happen. They actually met playing tennis with friends, and apparently they hit it off from Jump Street.
Right from Jump Street.
Right from Jump Street. 21 Jump Street.
21. Did you know I was in that?
I didn't, but it would not surprise me. You, Depp,
where?
Greco.
Yeah, they decided to go with
Gibby.
Depp. Yeah, they went with Depp.
Oh, so you were up for it, and you got passed over by Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Man, that must have been a blow to your ego.
Yeah, we still stay in contact.
Do you?
Yeah.
Hmm. Surprised he didn't put you at least in one of the Pirates of the
Caribbean. Oh, I was. I had to wear the squid outfit.
Oh, you cracked me up. But like we talked about, Cullen was not just rich. I mean, he was uber rich, well known for his dealings in the oil business, the oil industry. And he actually inherited an oil business from his father.
He did, but he took it to another level and made more money than what his father gave him.
Ever dreamed of, yeah. So, but he wasn't Jerry Jones. He didn't start from nothing and work his way
up.
He was given something, but he really had the gumption to take it.
He took it up, yeah. I mean, the whole thing just kind of reminds me like watching the old Dallas Knott's Landing type of, you know,
Dynasty.
Yeah.
Doesn't surprise me that you watched all those.
I didn't say I watched them all.
You just said you did. You said it reminds me of watching.
Is that out there now for everybody to know?
You can't take that back.
It was good stuff, man. Drama. Good drama.
Yeah, I didn't. I was more of a Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh, did you like the two Duke guys, did you?
Like Daisy.
Daisy?
Daisy Duke.
Who didn't like Daisy?
I know.
Had like Daisy. And
I don't think there's any man alive our age.
Grandpa Herschel?
No.
Uncle
Jesse.
Uncle Jesse, that was it.
I was going to say, I don't think there's a man alive that was our age, or that's our age, that back then didn't have a crush on Catherine Bach, who played Daisy.
Yeah, Daisy Dukes.
All right, let's get back to Cullen and Priscilla. They married. Now, Cullen was her third husband. She'd been married twice before, but from everyone's account, she was smitten with him. She was in love with him. Now, the money probably didn't hurt. I'll just throw that out there. I'd be a hell of a lot better looking if I had $500 million.
You would be.
Or $2.7 billion in today's money.
Yeah.
I'd be, move over, Ben Affleck.
There is a new Batman in town.
I'm Batman. But she did. She loved him. And he, in turn, took very good care of her and her kids.
Yeah, I think, you know, that those first couple years when you get married like that, that happens.
And we talked about this mansion. You know, they lived in what was almost an 180-acre estate.
See, it's just like Dallas, man.
It is like Dallas.
I just want to play that theme music in my head right now.
They took trips on a private jet. They would take trips just to go shopping. That's how you know you're super rich.
Yeah, when you're like, hey, I need a... Mom, I need a new dress or I need a new suit. And they're like, hey, let's take the jet.
We got to take the jet to
Europe.
Wherever, Milan.
Wherever, yeah.
Yeah, that's when you know you're pretty rich, when you fire up the jet to go shopping. But the mansion is important because Cullen would tell people that he was so proud of that mansion. It was like one of his finest accomplishments.
Yeah, I mean, he actually designed it. So it was his baby. It was his concept, his designs.
So it makes sense that it would be very special, very important to him. And the mansion is kind of a player, has a part in this story. It's where the incident takes place. We're going to be talking about it. Now, you talked about it, Gibbs. The first couple of years, usually a little, you know, pretty smooth sailing, right? You're in love. Things get overlooked that may bug you 10, 15 years down the road.
Sometimes not even that long.
Not even that long, maybe. But, you know, you don't notice those things because you're so in love with the person. But as the years went by for Priscilla and Cullen, you know, things did start to change a little bit. I think the passion died out somewhat. And it was said that they could be extremely passionate one day and they could be in an all-out, full-blown argument the next. I just thought that's what marriage was. is that not normal?
No, well, I think a lot of couples have very similar events.
Yeah, but after 6 years of marriage, Priscilla had enough, and she filed for divorce. And it was after she filed for divorce, they both started to date other people.
That's what you do. Got to get back on that horse.
I guess so. I don't know. I've never been divorced. I wouldn't know.
Well, if you ever do, get back on the horse.
I don't think I will.
I think you will.
I think I'll just sit on my couch and watch TV.
You're like, yeah, I don't ever need a woman ever again?
No. So Priscilla dated a few guys. Cullen was seeing a young single mom, and she actually had moved in with him. And it's about 2 years into the divorce that Priscilla asks for $50 million.
That's a lot of money.
$50 million. And on top of that, she asked for the mansion. She wants the mansion. Cullen's living in it at this point. Up to this point, she wants him out. And this is why we talked about the mansion. I keep saying the word mansion for some reason, but we talked about how he designed it. We talked about how he was so proud of it. This does not sit well with him. You know, he built this house. He paid for it. It was his hard-earned money that made it happen. And now he's about to lose it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good chunk of change. I mean, you got to figure back in 76, it was probably worth, I don't know, close to $7 million.
That is a lot.
That's a lot of money back then.
That is a lot of money. I mean, it's a lot of money today, a $7 million house today.
But back then, I mean, think about it.
That is a heck of a lot back then. There was not many $7 million mansions.
Probably just him and J.R. Ewing.
Around
in
1976. But Priscilla would eventually start seeing just one guy, and that would be Stan Farr. And Stan Farr was 6'8". He had played basketball. He was actually a really, really good basketball player at TCU, Texas Christian University. And they made a good-looking couple, an interesting-looking couple.
You think about it, 6'8", standing next to 5'2".
5'2". There's actually, I'll put a picture up.
Yeah.
There's a picture of them standing side by side. It looks kind of funny. So this brings us back to the night of the murders. And we talked about Stan and Priscilla are dating. They've been out on the town. They come back with friends. They had left Andrea at the mansion because she had some homework to do. Now, she's 12 years old. It's 1976. One of the things that Priscilla would talk about later is that she had no qualms leaving Andrea in the mansion by herself because they had like this world-class alarm system.
Right.
Probably the best that money could buy.
At the time, I would say probably, yeah.
Well, it probably wouldn't be the best that today's money could buy.
Well, because they didn't
technology has advanced quite a bit in the last 41 years.
They didn't have a lot of, you know, tech. Yeah. The bigger sirens.
Yeah, I think you could just get a Simply Safe. It'd probably be more technologically advanced.
That's probably true.
We're not doing an ad for Simply Safe this time. But and one thing that would come out later is that prior to leaving for that night on the town, Priscilla was informed by her attorney that the judge was going to make Cullen pay her more per month.
Yeah, while they were going through the proceedings. Remember, she wants $50 million, but during this time, he upped the, I guess you would call it the alimony, that he had to pay until they got the divorce final.
And we're going to hear Cullen talk about this a little bit later in clips. But this was great news for her, right? She was going to be getting more money.
Yeah.
Than she even thought, or than she at the time.
And it probably was a good indication that maybe the judge was going to lean more towards her getting the $50
million. Yeah, things were going to go her way. It's probably what she was thinking. So we talked about Priscilla and Stan get back home. And Priscilla noticed right away that the security system had been disarmed. And obviously you open the door, the little beeper thing doesn't go off. You know the alarm's not on. That would jump out at you right away. She would tell the police that Stan went upstairs. And it's right after this that she is suddenly face to face with the gunman, dressed all in black. But she said that this person was wearing a wig and had their face covered. And from her statement, it basically went that, you know, this person said hi and immediately started shooting. That's all they said, hi. Then she says Stan came running down the stairs, but the man in black, we're calling him the man in black, shot Stan 4 times. Priscilla then turns to run, takes off running, and the man in black chases her. But that's when he hears a car pull up. And this car pulling up, it's going to be Bubba Gavril. And he's with his girlfriend, Beverly Bass. And they get out of the car. They're standing in the driveway. And this is when the gunman shoots Bubba several times. He ends up paralyzed. We talked about that. Beverly and Priscilla, who's wounded at this point with a gunshot to the chest, they run off, they're hiding, but they're also trying to see if maybe there's somebody that can help them. The issue here is, Gibbs, it's a 180-acre estate.
Yeah, it's a big spread.
You just can't run next door like you could at my house and knock on somebody's door.
No, you got to go a little bit.
But the issue is Priscilla's forced to flee. She doesn't have a chance to go back in the house to find her daughter. I mean, she can't. I mean, there's a guy shooting at her. As much as she would want to. So we dove into some more details there. But now this brings us back to police are on the scene. Emergency personnel are on the scene. Beverly was not shot. They rush Bubba and Priscilla to the hospital. And it's at the hospital that Priscilla's oldest daughter arrives and she sees her mom in the ER. And Priscilla would tell her daughter that it was Cullen who shot her and not to let him get away with it. Now, she's fighting for her life. She took a shot to the chest. She's fighting to stay alive. She points the finger at Cullen, but this is also a point in time where she's informed that her 12-year-old Andrea was killed. And what adds Gibbs to what is already incredibly sad for Priscilla? I mean, she's fighting for her life. She thinks her ex-husband just shot her, her soon-to-be ex, and she just found out her 12-year-old is dead. Is that, you know, her wounds are so severe. She was near death. She would not even be able to attend her own daughter's funeral. That's how bad a shape she was in.
Yeah, that's very, very sad.
Now, Priscilla would eventually tell the police during questioning that it was Cullen who shot her. You know, she would say that even though this person's face was covered, she knew it was him. She could tell it was him. And she even begged him not to shoot. She would say, quote, "Cullen, don't, please don't. I love you, Cullen. I've always loved you. There's never been anyone else."
Yeah, I mean, she'd say anything to make someone stop shooting at her. And that's what she says. "I said whatever I had to in hopes that he would stop shooting."
And I believe that. I think in that situation, you would say whatever you thought could get you out of that.
Yeah, I would.
Keep you safe, keep your family. She doesn't know right now what's happened to everybody.
Yeah, at that time, she didn't know what was going on with her daughter.
But this is backed by Beverly Bass as well, because she would state that it was Cullen that was shooting that night. So police immediately, they start to investigate, and they hunt down Cullen, and he was at his girlfriend's home where he was now staying because he had to give up the mansion. They asked him to get dressed, and they arrested him. But they didn't put any cuffs on.
Which, you think if you're arresting somebody for shooting a 12-year-old and another individual, I don't know.
Several individuals.
Anybody else? I don't know. I mean, I think that's part of the controversy. Would you do that for anybody? Or is it just because he was the wealthiest man in town?
Yeah. That's what I believe.
Yeah. Or wealthiest man in the state.
In a situation where police think you've shot multiple people, killed a couple people, they're not really going to take too many chances. If they're arresting you for that, they're going to put the cuffs on. But this guy is the boss hog of, to stay with the Dukes of Hazzard references.
Yeah, very powerful individual.
Very rich, very powerful. But they do take him in for questioning, and they charge him with the shootings.
My brother Kenneth called me in the middle of the night where I was living and told me that there was a shooting, and I asked him who was shot. All I remember him telling me that Priscilla was shot. I think my brother said, "They think you did it," something like that. I don't recall the exact conversation. He woke me up as I found out later that Priscilla told him.
That you did it?
Yeah. They asked me if I had a gun. I said, yes. They said, where is it? I said, in the trunk of my car, and I went and got it for him.
On the night of the murders, he asked you why two people had to die. He says that you replied, "There are some things you don't need a reason for."
Did I say that?
He says that you said that.
Remember that. Him saying that, I don't remember saying that, but I could have.
Why would you say that?
I don't know, just philosophically speaking.
So that was a part of an interview that Cullen Davis did years later for a local news channel, and I just find it fascinating, Gibbs. And, you know, he laughs in a strange way. Now, granted, a number of years have gone by, but...
And he also enjoyed toying with the media sometimes, I think.
Well, we're going to hear a lot more from Cullen Davis. He's an interesting cat. There's no doubt about that.
And when you got that type of money, you can be.
It's easier to be, right?
Yeah.
You can be eccentric. It's called, you know, it's called being eccentric when you got money.
You can do that.
When you don't have money, you're just batshit crazy. But when you got money, you're just eccentric.
Yeah. It's just a different terminology.
Now, Cullen's alibi would end up being that he was in bed with his girlfriend at her house. His girlfriend, Karen, really couldn't corroborate the story because she said she couldn't remember that night due to the fact that she had taken a sleeping pill. So we mentioned Cullen's charge. The judge sets a bail of only $80,000. Now, $80,000 is a lot of money in 1976, but not given the fact that, you know, this guy's got half a billion.
Yeah, exactly.
That's like me and you going down to Taco Bell and getting us a chalupa.
Chalupa. Santa Fe sauce.
So, of course, Cullen post bond that very day. Easily. But what the police did is they end up putting surveillance on him. They're watching his private jet. And that turned out to be a good tactic because they catch him about a month later at the private jet. And when they ask him what he's doing, he tells police that he's flying to Houston for business. But they don't believe him. And this time they actually do slap the cuffs on him and they revoke his bail, which is a bad move for him because now he's behind bars.
Yeah. Now he's in there with Bubba.
I knew you were going to say Bubba. Bubba and Cullen. Cullen and Bubba. Finkel and Einhorn. As the police investigation continues, they start hearing some stories about Cullen Davis, his temper, some very aggressive behavior. This was a guy that was known for wanting things his way, and he would get it. You know, he had the money to get what he wanted, and if he didn't get what he wanted, he was not a happy camper. Priscilla's daughter would talk about how bad his temper was. And one specific story was of a time that Cullen and Priscilla were arguing.
Just want to put out there, I know where you're going. Pet alert.
Violence against animal.
Yeah. Or, yeah. There's some people always say, can you let us know?
Right. Yeah. Because this story, basically, you know, they're arguing. She's holding a kitten and he snatches the kitten out of her arms and essentially kills it by throwing it down on the hardwood floor, you know, throwing it very hard and it dies. And this happened. I mean, he actually admits to this to police. He also said that he did hit Priscilla one time, slapped her, but he would say that was the only time he hit her. Cullen had an adopted son that would later do interviews too. And he would come out talking on the side of, you know, his dad, saying Cullen never hit him. He never saw this anger that other people talked about. But it would be about a year after the arrest that the trial would begin. The DA's office would come out with what they believed the motive was. And this is that Cullen wanted revenge because of the divorce. He hated Priscilla. She had taken his mansion. She had taken already a lot of his money that, you know, in his mind, Gibbs, he was thinking, I earned that money. She didn't earn that money.
Right.
And she's stealing it from me. And then, you know, we got this $50 million settlement.
Right. Lingering out there.
Hanging in the balance. Now, that would be a lot. Now, he's worth a lot, but $50 million is a lot to...
It's like 10% of his estate.
Yeah. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's like me and you going to get a nice steak. Not a chalupa. A high-end steak, maybe.
A really high-end steak.
Really high-end steak.
Yeah. Filet mignon.
Filet mignon?
Filet mignon.
I like me some of that filet mignon.
Filet...
Sometimes I drink it with a little Dom Perignon.
Yeah. Put a little Bernays sauce on it.
Yeah. And have that. The DA's office decides to try Cullen for Andrea's murder first. Because I think in their mind, they felt that this was going to have the biggest impact, right? The murder of a 12-year-old girl.
Well, if you're going to have a slam dunk, you would think that this would be the one.
Well, the jury's going to find that, you know, any murder is offensive, but we talk about it a lot. Children add a whole different element, especially in the mind of a jury. It has to.
The emotional impact, for sure.
They have children. Most, you know, a lot of people on the jury are going to have children.
Whether they have children or nieces or, you know, they're going to have some type of relation to that.
Yeah. And the prosecution is going to allege that Andrea was killed because, number one, Cullen was upset with Priscilla. And more to the point, she would have been a witness. She most likely could have identified him. But Cullen's defense would try to paint a picture telling the jury that Cullen didn't care about the mansion. He didn't idolize it like most people were saying he did. You know, he was just waiting on this divorce to be finalized so he could move forward with his life. They would say, you know, he'd already moved in with his girlfriend and her two kids. And the defense really played up the fact that police had no gun.
Yeah, they had his gun, but they didn't have the gun that was used in the shooting.
Yeah, I said that wrong. You're right. They had a gun. They didn't have the gun. They didn't have the murder weapon, is what I should have said. They didn't have any fingerprints. And again, they had plenty of fingerprints. They had Cullen's fingerprints, but they didn't mean anything because he lived at the mansion.
Right.
So it would be weird to not find his fingerprints. And they had no wig, right? This perpetrator that night was definitely wearing a wig. They didn't have it.
So they don't have any physical evidence. Nothing. Just eyewitness statements, but no physical evidence to tie him to anything.
And I think that always makes it tougher, right? Very tough to convict somebody without at least a shred of physical evidence.
Especially in Texas, because it's the death penalty. They're going for that. So I think the defense is going to say, look, if you're going to put this guy to death,
you better have more.
Yeah.
I get you. Now, what we haven't talked about yet is who is actually on Cullen's defense team. It's probably not too hard to figure out that he hired the best defense attorney that money could buy. And it was even said, Gibbs, that, you know, he had more money to spend on his defense than the state actually had to spend on prosecuting him. That's very rare for somebody to have that type of money to put up against the system. So his lead attorney was a Texas legend. In the judicial circles, it was a man by the name of Richard Racehorse Haynes. And it wasn't known at the time, but it would be discovered years later that Cullen paid a top district attorney investigator for inside information. So he was getting fed information on the state's case, what they had, what they knew. So he had a heads up.
Yeah.
That'd be very helpful information.
You would like that information, you know? I mean, he would later come out and say, this DA investigator came to him, trying to, you know, buddy up with him and offered to get him, that he didn't go after this guy and solicit it, but other people say that he did. So
he was willing, even if the guy came to him, he was willing to pay for it.
He paid for it, yeah.
I'm not sure I wouldn't do the same thing if I had the money. If my life was on the line, I don't know, Gibbs, I would do whatever I had to.
Well, I think so. Why wouldn't you?
I would hope I'd never be in that position, but
I hope not either.
I can't say I blame him very much for pulling out all stops.
Yeah, if you got the money and you have the resources, why wouldn't you use them?
Yeah, you use every available resource. So his team would cover his alibi, you know, based on his girlfriend, Karen Master, and she would testify that Cullen Davis was in bed with her around the time of the murder. Now, this is even though she initially told authorities that she had taken that sleeping pill and she really didn't know. She didn't remember the night. She wasn't sure where he was. And the defense set out to discredit two of the state's eyewitnesses. You know, they would state that Beverly Bass owed Priscilla some favors and that she would lie for her in this case to blame Cullen. And they went as far, Gibbs, as to say that they actually hatched this plan to put the blame on Cullen after Priscilla was shot and she was bleeding from the chest.
Yeah, so they're saying she's sitting there fighting for her life and she says, hey, let's put this on Cullen. That's what they're saying.
Or Cullen.
We're Colin.
We could put it on Colin too if you want. I don't know who Colin is, but
we put it on.
If we can't get it on Colin, let's put it on Colin.
Yeah,
yeah. You're fighting. You cling to life, and you got the.
It's a stretch.
It's a little bit. Not saying it couldn't happen.
No, I think it's a stretch, but yeah,
a little bit of a stretch.
Racehorse Haynes hammered away at his theory that someone set Davis up to look like the killer. He told the jury that Priscilla Davis lived in two worlds because of her Percodan addiction. She associated with scalawags, rogues, and brigands, he said, convicted felons who were involved with drugs, and she presided over them like a queen bee.
Newscast from back in the day.
Right.
And I just thought, the reason I like that clip, you know, they're talking about the defense tactics a little bit, but the words that they use, right, saying that she cavorts with scallywags. Brigands.
I'm going to use those next week when I mean, that's like back at the office.
Pirate lingo or something.
Scallywags. Watch out for the scallywags out there.
So the defense was ruthless in trying to break down Priscilla as a witness. They kept her on the stand for 10 or 11 days. I mean, that would be grueling. And you heard it in that clip saying that the defense was going after her about drug use. They did make a big deal about that in questioning, talking about parties, her sex life, money. By the end of the questioning, the defense had really done a pretty good job of making Priscilla look like a bad wife and mother to the jury.
Haynes knew more about Priscilla Davis, literally, than Priscilla Davis could recall on the stand. Haynes was able to cross-examine Priscilla about sexual escapades that she had 4 years before the murders happened. There's not a judge in the country that would let that sort of cross-examination material into evidence these days.
Now, that one's interesting because you have somebody saying that the defense was allowed to go down avenues that they probably shouldn't have been.
Right.
Or wouldn't today.
Definitely wouldn't today.
Definitely wouldn't today. And I think the media was really rough on Priscilla. You know, a lot of the coverage and a lot of the attention that was paid to her when she was on the stand, it was about what she wore, what she said. You know, not the fact that this woman was shot in the chest, was grieving over the loss of her daughter. I think it was rough for her.
Yeah, I think it was rough on her. You know, I mean, she's expecting them to talk about how she lost a daughter, how she was shot, but yet they're talking about what she's wearing to trial every day, what she looks like, talking about her past that had nothing to do with, you know, current events, but that's what they're focused on because she definitely stood out in this arena.
And then the defense tries to shift motive away from Cullen by saying Priscilla wasn't even the target. You know, they contend that the real target was Priscilla's boyfriend, Stan, and they do this by alleging that he had connections with high-end people, high-end drug dealers, something went bad, and that he was the one that was supposed to be hit that night.
Yeah, I think he was pretty tied into the nightlife scene in Fort Worth, and where a lot of the cocaine and things like that was taken off, and somehow they thought that maybe he was involved with that, and that he was the reason for the hit.
Well, whether they thought it or not, they used it.
Sure. I mean, right? They're trying to show reasonable doubt.
Yep. Doesn't really matter if they thought it or not. If it sounds good, they're
exactly
going to use
it. Didn't need to be true at all. They're just trying to get it in the juror's head.
And there were a lot of spectators at this trial. I mean, it was a high profile case. I mean, mostly because of who Cullen Davis was, but it was said that people were treating him like he was some type of movie star, asking for his autograph. I mean, women were bringing him baked goods, and apparently the judge was fine with letting him have this stuff. Very strange.
Yeah, here, go ahead and take the tin of cookies, and here's your cake, and go ahead and sign those autographs.
So the trial lasted about 3 months. The jury only deliberated for 4 hours, and they came back with a not guilty verdict for Cullen on the murder of Andrea. And you can imagine, right? Priscilla, her oldest daughter, they were shocked. Many people were shocked by this verdict.
I think the whole legal system that day was taken back. And of course, I think all the victims and families and relatives of the victims were all quite taken back.
I can't tell you how good it feels because I've been in there 15 months fighting this thing, and I didn't know it felt so good.
What are your plans now?
Well, I'm going back to work. I'm probably show up Monday morning at 8 o'clock for work as usual.
Don't you think y'all take a few days off?
Well, I've already had a few days off.
There was never any doubt at all that Colin, that we wouldn't be walking out. It was just that we thought it might take a little time.
It looks like I'm out of a job. I guess I got to go to work. I guess I'll start looking for a job, and I don't know where I'll start looking.
So interviews after the verdict, Colin, then his girlfriend, and then I think the last one is his attorney, Haynes. But then Priscilla gets interviewed.
Well, I hope that all the money that it took to buy all the lies brings a lot of people a lot of joy, because that's exactly what happened.
Short and to the point, which I think she was, right? I mean, really, in real life, she was
short. So. Very forward.
Very to the point. I mean, that's her personality, right. And that's the type of interview she gave. But you can hear her. She basically says that he bought his way out of a murder conviction. That was her belief. But Cullen moved on with his life.
You know, I think he had to.
After the trial. Well, yeah, what else could he do?
Right.
I'm not going to sit in his room and...
Dwell.
You know, you hear him say, I got to get back to work Monday, 8 a.m.
But he's got divorce attorneys to pay.
When he's got, he still has to resolve the divorce. I mean, to me, Gibbs, that's one of the really strange things about this is all of this kind of takes place while this divorce is still
pending. Yeah.
Now, if he'd have been convicted, it probably would have made the divorce a lot easier.
I think it would have been a slam dunk for her.
But Cullen's freedom is actually pretty short-lived. You know, we say he tries to get on with his life, but about 9 months after his not guilty verdict, he's charged again. And this time he's charged with hiring a hitman. And it came down to a man named David McCrory. And McCrory was an associate of Colin Davis. And he was the one that went to the FBI and said that Davis had been asking him to find a hitman to effect the murder of several people, quote unquote, who had crossed Davis. And this included Priscilla and the judge that was presiding over their divorce.
That's some pretty serious stuff.
Yeah. To have somebody close to you go to the FBI and say, hey, this guy's tried to hire me to kill multiple people.
Right.
They're going to look at that, especially given the fact of what had just happened. This didn't come out of the blue. The guy just...
This is only 9 months later.
Right, 9 months after the trial. But what the FBI does is they set up a meeting with this David McCrory. And he's wired. And they give him some fake photographs. And these fake pictures are of the divorce judge essentially looking like he has been murdered and stuffed into the trunk of a car.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they use fake blood and everything.
I mean, they went all out.
Yeah.
They wanted Colin Davis to believe that David McCrory had murdered this judge. And their hope was that once Colin Davis saw the photograph, that he would pay David McCrory the $25,000 hit fee that they had agreed upon.
Okay. I'm leaving alone. I will.
I gotta have an alibi ready for Art when it,
okay,
the subject comes up.
All right. I'll,
so give me some advance.
I will.
Warning.
I gotta go. Now you got me into this deal. I got Judge Edson dead for you.
Good.
I'll get the rest of them dead for you. You want a bunch of people dead.
Okay, what are you gonna do with these?
I'm gonna get rid of the
That's good. I'm glad to hear it.
All right. Who do you want next?
All of a sudden, after I leave, I stop at a phone booth, and the district attorney and his men show up and arrest me.
But to this day, despite the undercover film, despite the $25,000 he handed over, Colin Davis insists he was set up.
So what was the $25,000 for?
I don't remember.
Okay.
That was, that's what I say. There was something about the $25,000, but I don't remember how that came into play.
So that was parts of the actual FBI audio. And there's video that goes with it. And in the video, you can see Cullen hand the money over to David McCrory, and then they leave. And then you actually heard Cullen and talk about it, right? So he leaves and he gets arrested. So you would think they'd have a pretty solid case, Gibbs.
You would.
With this evidence now.
But he's got a heck of an attorney he's going to hire again.
And he's going to go back to Richard Racehorse Haynes. This guy's a legend. It's like Perry Mason.
He really is, actually. He's that good.
And Haynes is going to try to flip this whole thing around and say that Cullen thought he was actually working with the FBI, and this is why he went along with this sting, or whatever you call it, Gibbs. Cullen Davis would state that he got a call from a man who said he was an FBI agent and instructed Davis to go along with David McCrory's story when they meet, and they would arrest McCrory for extortion. And Davis testified at trial that's exactly what he was doing when those tapes were made. Now, you heard in the clip, at the end of the clip, and again, that's Cullen Davis many years after all this happened, saying that he didn't know what the $25,000 was for.
Right.
Okay, maybe, maybe not. Seems to me like that would be a really big thing that happened in your life. You might remember some of the details about something like that.
You would think. I guess that'd be like you handing me a quarter. So maybe you wouldn't remember.
Maybe.
Like, I don't know. Did I give me a quarter? I can't recall.
But if we were in the middle of a sting operation, and I knew it was a sting operation.
You would think you would remember.
Seems like, yeah. I would. But Davis would say that the $25,000 he handed over were gambling winnings that he'd been holding on to for David McCrory.
Yeah, we ever go gambling, I hit $25,000. You hold on to it for me for a while.
you trust me to hold on to
it? Yeah, you hold on to it. I'll get it from you later.
But the thing about this is that no one at the FBI would validate Cullen's story. So if he's working with the FBI, there's not a single person there that's willing to corroborate that.
But again, they're just going for reasonable doubt.
It's all you need, man. And in this second trial, because we're in the middle of this second trial, the defense had a witness who was a linguistics expert, actually a professor, and he said on the stand that it was David McCrory that had manipulated and led the conversation.
You think somebody can do that?
I manipulate you every time we're together.
I'm like your puppet? Is what you're saying?
I just lead you down the path that I need you to go.
Is that what it's called?
I don't know. I don't think anybody can manipulate you.
Nah, I'm two steps ahead of you.
Like that law-abiding citizen?
Yeah.
You get stuff planned like years in advance?
Exactly.
People don't even know what's coming.
No, but it's on its way.
That's a great movie.
That is a good one.
I love that. So they go back and forth during this trial, and eventually the jury gets the case, and they deliberate a lot longer. You know, they're about 2 days into deliberations when they come back and say they're deadlocked. So you have all of that evidence, you have the recordings, and it leads to a hung jury. Now, what's fascinating is the breakdown of the jury votes. So you had 8 people that voted to convict Cullen Davis, 4 voted to acquit him. And there's a story that would come out about the judge in this second trial that when he gets the news that this is going to end up in a hung jury, he actually drops an F-bomb because he's shocked.
Yeah, he can't believe it.
He can't believe that it went the way that it did.
So after this, the state decides they're not going to try him on any other shooting victims. The murder of Stan, the Priscilla and Bubba being wounded. They're just not going to pursue it. And they're not going to retry him in this hitman case.
And on top of that, Cullen Davis ends up succeeding in winning the divorce case.
Yeah, he only has to pay $3 million instead of the $50 million that she wanted.
So $3 million, a lot of money, but a far cry from 50. Oh,
that's a win for him.
And he got the mansion back. So things are going pretty rosy for old Cullen at this point. But later in life, you know, his business started to struggle. He ended up having to declare bankruptcy. He did marry Karen, ended up adopting her son, eventually had to sell the mansion. And at one point he told a reporter that, quote, "The only admission a person has to make is to God. The Bible does not require confession of sins to anybody." So later in life, Gibbs, he became religious. He found faith.
Yeah, through his wife, Karen.
And it was part of finding this newfound faith that he actually reached out to Andrea's father and asked him for forgiveness. But Cullen Davis insists that that was not a confession. He did agree to a judgment for Stan Farr's son in the amount of $250,000. And in a very strange twist, the prosecutor that went after Cullen Davis, he ended up dating Priscilla for some time after the trial. Priscilla would eventually succumb to breast cancer. She passed away. Karen passed away in 2016, but Cullen's still alive. He's 83, 84 years old now.
Yeah. Yep. Still kicking.
So that's the case of, you know, the murder of Andrea Wilborn, Stan Farr. There's a lot going on in this one, though.
There is. I don't know this was one that could ever be solved, since most of the people attached to this one have passed.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, Cullen's 83. A lot of the principal players have passed away. And it happened a long time ago.
Long time ago. And there was no physical evidence either.
41 years ago.
Unless someone wants to confess on their deathbed or other, we're just not going to have an answer to this.
Still interesting, though.
It was.
I mean, to me, it comes down to who you believe. And
yeah,
if Priscilla's telling the truth that she knows it was him that shot her, then it was him.
Yeah, it comes down to, you believe that wiretap, you know, were they talking about murder? I mean, we know they were.
Yeah.
But which one was setting who up?
Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to figure out why the FBI would be using Cullen Davis to nail David McCrory for extortion. I mean, I didn't read anything, Gibbs. I don't know if you did, mm-hmm. but obviously for that to be true, David McCrory would have had to have come to Cullen Davis at some point and said, "Hey, if you don't pay me
right
$25,000, I'm going to say you did this or this or whatever."
Right. But they don't have anything like that.
There's no evidence that I know of. So there's a lot of smoke here, and it's all pointing in one direction, in my opinion.
It does. And there's some strange things that are said that makes you wonder. But then again, the courts didn't find him guilty.
Or the juries, at least. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I know what a lot of people will say, and they're probably not wrong, and that is the fact that, you know, if you have a lot of money, you can definitely tip the scales of justice in your favor. I mean, we know he was getting information. We know he paid for that.
Yeah. I mean, you could say if this was just an average Joe, then
things would have gone
differently. Probably. Yeah.
I would agree with that. I mean, whether he used his money in other ways that we don't know about.
Right.
Or it could have been that sometimes, you know, the jury is just in awe of somebody like that.
Could have been a little bit of that. It also makes a difference. I mean, you can get an okay attorney, or you can get the attorney that is just balls to the wall, top notch, man. Yeah.
Knows every trick in the book, far ahead of everybody else.
Because that they call him Racehorse, and he would talk about how, you know, he never looked at a client as guilty or innocent. He didn't care. He didn't care if you were guilty. He didn't care if you're innocent. He just looked at, you know, he was going to beat that case, period.
What can I do to get you off?
Yeah. I don't care what you are. I'm just going to get you off.
I mean, of course, I would love to know the truth, but I still think the story is interesting, the twists and the turns and,
yeah,
and all the different facets of this case really kind of got me.
In my head, I have my conclusion.
Oh, me too. Obviously, I have a way that I'm leaning. And I think a lot of people listening will have a hard time not thinking that, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. But, yeah, it's one of those.
Yeah.
All right, we got a voicemail. Let's play that.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Gibby. This is Andrea calling from Indiana. I listen to you guys all the time. I am a huge fan. You have gotten me through many, many weeks of work. I work 10 to 12-hour days inspecting medical products at a company called Cook. And you make the days go by so quick. And y'all just keep it up and keep your own time ticking.
All right. Great voicemail from Andrea. Thank you so much for calling in and leaving us that. You know what, Gibbs? I'm always thrilled when people call or send emails or something and say that the podcast helps in any way, right? And I don't care if it's us helping you get through work, or a lot of people are saying or have some pretty major illnesses and we're kind of helping them cope or deal with some of the things that they're going through. We've had people say that they've lost loved ones and we've helped them. The podcast has helped them kind of get through some of that. Now, it's a small part, right? We're playing a very small part, but to play any part,
it's always nice to hear.
It is. It's amazing. You know, we like what we're doing and we like it even more when.
And she's just right over there.
Who?
She's just right over there. She's in Indiana.
Oh, Andrea?
Yeah, she's right there.
Yeah, well, you're pointing like.
Well, it's right there across the border, man.
And you're pointing.
Am I pointing the wrong direction? Probably.
Yeah, it's that way.
It's that way. She's right over there. She's 30 minutes that way.
I have to think. We're in the studio. Which way is which?
Yeah.
All right, so that's it for another episode of True Crime All the Time Unsolved. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.